Attention all passengers. The Uber ride for Jeff's rugby team will depart in 5 minutes from platform 15. Your ride comes with 6 toilets and a refreshments carriage that you'll empty within 5 minutes. Thank you for booking your tickets on Uber.
Trains on Uber.
I'll now hand you over to my best man, Eddie. Wow, wow, wow. Second time's a charm, eh, Billy boy?
Oh, God.
Substitution, courtesy of Paddy Power. Embarrassing Eddie makes way for sensible Samuel.
Cool, that was close.
You might not always pick the right starter, but your sub can still deliver. Because with Paddy's Super Sub, your bet rolls over to the player coming on. Paddy Power.
Valid on selected leagues and markets only. Pre-match and in-play bets on qualifying player outcome selections only. T's and C's and exclusions apply. 18+, gambleaware.org.
No one will ever forget that morning.
25 years later, I still get choked up. Come and do it on our turf.
It was personal.
The whole world changed that day.
I knew there was not going to be baseball or, you know, life as we know it.
Everybody wanted to help in some, you know, capacity.
We made the promise that we're going to pay off every mortgage of every first responder in America.
It was the first time I saw my children smile.
We will never forget.
Never forget.
Never forget.
Over the next hour, we'll show you how the Mets and Yankees organizations did their part to help New York heal, and how a family from Staten Island made sure we'd never forget. Greetings, I'm Rob Riggle. I've spent much of my career doing stand-up shows at comedy clubs like the Laugh Factory and all across this country. I'm also an actor. I work in film and television. But before I was doing comedy and acting, I had another career, one that I'm very proud of. I served in the United States Marine Corps for 23 years, doing tours of duty in Kosovo, Liberia, Afghanistan. My Marine Reserve unit was activated just hours after the attacks of 9/11. Our unit worked night and day on the rescue efforts at Ground Zero, 12 hours on, 12 hours off. It was destruction on a scale you couldn't imagine. And 25 years later, like so many of you, I can still so vividly see those images. We cannot forget the horror we saw when an unspeakable evil brought the Twin Towers down, struck the Pentagon, and crashed a plane into Shanksville, Pennsylvania. New York City firefighter Stephen Siller was among the 343 members of the FDNY who lost their lives trying to rescue people trapped in those towers. Stephen's family wanted to find a way to honor their brother for his heroism and sacrifice. From that desire to make a difference, they created the Tunnel to Towers Foundation with a mission to do good and never forget.
My family suffered a tragedy that is unthinkable. My dad, on the day of September 11th, he ran through the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel to the World Trade Center, where he ultimately lost his life.
He hears on the radio scanner that the towers were hit. He goes back to his firehouse. He gets his gear. He drives his truck to the mouth of the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel. It's closed for security reasons. He straps 60 pounds of fire gear on his back. He runs through that tunnel. He goes into the South Tower. He goes up those stairs, and while saving people, he gives up his life.
That building was full of innocent people, decent people just going to work. And then you get first responders who are rushing in there to save strangers. They didn't run in there to get their kids. They ran in there to get strangers.
Everybody has a cousin, everybody has a brother or an uncle that lost their lives on 9/11, so they all relate to everything my family's doing with the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. They wanted to leave something for me and my siblings to have to remember my dad. We're gonna create this organization. We're gonna do good things. They may have done something terrible to us, and they attacked our city, our country, but we're gonna be better, and that's what we did.
I wanna make sure everybody knows that the promise that we made to begin with to build a house for every catastrophically injured service member or first responder, we're always gonna do that. When we made the promise that we're gonna pay off every mortgage of every first responder in America, you die in the line of duty, you die for us, and you leave a young family behind, we are going to make sure that you get a mortgage-free home. If you're a veteran and you come back from serving us and you're on the streets of America, we're not going to let that happen.
Just as the Siller family asked, what can we do to contribute, to make a difference? That's what so many New Yorkers ask themselves. So did those ballplayers who wear New York on their uniforms and caps, representing the New York Yankees and the New York Mets.
This NY on the cap, it represents more than the Yankees. It represents the city of New York and what they're dealing with right now.
These players represent the city in which they play, and they took it really, really seriously.
It was personal. I know the world grieved and the country grieved, but it was a whole next level of, they hit us.
The Mets were in Pittsburgh on the day of the attack. A few days later, the team chartered a bus to return to New York. When they got close enough to see the skyline, they realized the world and their roles as ballplayers would never be the same.
When we got to the New Jersey side of the Hudson and looked across the river where we usually would see the skyline of Manhattan, it was gone. And everyone went to one side of the bus, like their faces were pasted against the window, looking at what we were seeing in disbelief and horror. And from that minute on, there wasn't one word spoken on that bus.
It was reality, like, oh my God, this is real. I can't believe that those towers are not there. I can remember just like this sort of empty feeling, like, okay, now what?
On the fly, the parking lot at Shea Stadium became the staging area for the rescue effort.
Sue Lucci, who doesn't get a lot of credit.
Right, 100%.
Who's behind the scenes.
Yeah, really one of the unsung heroes. I mean,
she deserves a medal.
Yeah.
Sue was unbelievable during this 10 days.
You know, you've got star players and captains like John Franco and Mike Piazza. She kind of became a leader for this franchise.
I was the stadium manager, so myself and my boss were the two who took care of everybody in the building, right? And that just got extended out into the parking lots and to the public and to the firemen and the police. It really started as something just so simple. I took a whiteboard and I just wrote donations here. And the next thing we know, this turned into a 10-day effort.
You gonna say clubby? Sure. Thanks.
It was surreal. It was like baseball immediately became secondary. You know, we went from packed parking lots with fans coming to the game to trailers being pulled in and firefighters that were coming in and staying in the bowels of the stadium and sleeping on cots. It was quite a transformation.
We turned the parking lot into like a Home Depot with aisles of boxes all organized from jeans to underwear to eyewash to things that were brought up from North Carolina on buses.
Tractor trailers were lined up, the backs were open, packed with boots and batteries and water and blankets and flashlights, so whatever supplies that were needed.
It was 24/7, 4 o'clock in the morning, Sue was out there, people were out there.
You know, it was a group effort. I was probably maybe the loudest with the biggest mouth, but people showed up. We had the cops there. We had firemen from other states that arrived. We had people hitchhike from Pennsylvania. Every walk of life came to that building. With something to give, whether it was their time or whether it was physical material.
Probably four days later, we came back to practice.
When the practice is over, instead of getting in their cars and going home to the man, they came out to the parking lot.
There was always, like, they could use somebody to carry a box or water or something and just throw them on the trucks. So we kind of did that. And whether it was for a half hour, an hour, 2 hours.
We're talking about thousands of large containers in the parking lot. And they helped organize it. And some of the guys were there until dark.
Nobody from the Mets had to like, hey, please, would you go out and help? Like, we just wanted to.
We gave back to the community. Every call was, do this, we have a child, we have to go to a dinner. We have to go to a hospital. A policeman's little kids who were lost, have father, could you help us out? thing is, I was fortunate I had a group of guys that enabled me to do that. Everybody had a backstory why it was important to them. Johnny from Brooklyn, it's personal for him. You know, Al White was in New Jersey, was personal for him. The other group of guys, I still choke up, forgive me. We did the right thing, and we didn't do it for any ulterior motive, but it was the right thing to do.
We wanted to help any way we can. When there's a building on fire, most people are running out, these guys are running in.
I think it's pretty important that we not forget what all these men and women went through and what all of the families went through afterwards. I mean, nearly 3,000 Americans lost their lives that day on just the day where they were going to work. And it's important that we remember so that doesn't happen again.
Life goes on. We have to go on and move on, but I know I'll never forget. I know the people in my life will never forget. My brother was on that pile digging. I know he's never going to forget. He won't forget because he developed prostate cancer from that.
The thing is, I definitely don't want to forget the people that sacrificed everything. But we can't forget about the people that are doing it now.
What we do every 9/11, the group of guys is Johnny, Todd Zeal,
Al,
we go to a firehouse. I don't think we missed maybe one or two in the 25 years. That's our way of not forgetting it. And every time we go to a firehouse, we say the same thing. As long as we're here, we ain't forgetting, boys. And it's as simple as that.
Today, we remember the bravery of 343 members of this great department who made the supreme sacrifice so that others could be saved. We will never forget.
What a fitting way for the Mets players to keep their promise to never forget. Tunnel to Towers has its own way of keeping that promise. Since 2002, every September, T2T retraces Stephen's footsteps from the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel to Lower Manhattan. The first year, there were 1,500 runners. This past year, 40,000. The attack on 9/11 hit close to home for the New York Yankees, especially for manager Joe Torre, who grew up in Brooklyn. But it was the entire Yankee organization that searched for ways to offer comfort to those who had lost so much.
When you say 9/11, that takes you back to a place that you'll never forget.
That morning, my buddy knocked on the door and said, hey, something's going on at the World Trade Center. Then within minutes, we heard another thump in your chest.
It was very personal for me. You know, there was a lot of anger. I would, you know, come and do it on our turf.
It was an invasion of our privacy, our life, in our backyard.
Everybody's going to get their kids at school to figure out, you know, what's going to happen next.
It was a whole day of shock, kind of on the phone, wishing I was home actually with family and not, you know, in New York by myself. You just kind of want to get around your loved ones.
The whole world changed that day. I did drive to Yankee Stadium. I don't even know why I did. I remember being at the parking lot encouraging all the employees to go home.
I knew there was not going to be sports, baseballs, or, you know, life as we know it.
All of a sudden, baseball is okay. It's certainly not important. You know, you're more concerned about people.
Everybody wanted to help in some, you know, capacity.
How can we participate? How can we help with some of that healing?
Our president, Randy Levine, you know, had arranged for some bands to take us to visit Ground Zero.
This is some very sacred ground that people that are dealing with something in a totally different dimension that, you know, that we can't even comprehend.
I didn't have to talk anybody into anything. I think we were affected the same way.
Even a mile away from there, we were all chatting it up, and then we got there, it was like definitely quiet.
I don't know if there are words to describe what we saw. You would never think you would see that in your backyard.
And you talk about just total destruction, things that you do see on a movie set.
And to see the people on the rock pile and trying to, you know, recover, you know, the lost ones that were too many. That was something you'd never forget.
Nobody knew what to do. just giving the Yankee cap to somebody and getting the fire department cap and putting it on your head just meant they were human.
And then we went to the armory. Now, the armory was where all the family members were waiting for results from the DNA.
The people were coming in with toothbrushes, combs, any item that had DNA on to try to find the bodies of their family. Can you imagine? And we're going in there and trying to cheer them up.
Again, at this point in time, I didn't think it was our place to go in there. You know, we're baseball players, but so what? You know, they're certainly dealing with something much more important than winning and losing, you know.
It was a lot of uncomfortableness. Players are asking me as general manager, what are we doing here? This doesn't feel right. And I acknowledge it didn't feel right. I mentally wasn't certain, like, as we were taking each step towards the entrance and going in, that, like, we don't belong here. We just felt like intruders at first.
My center fielder, Bernie Williams, went up to this woman and he says, I don't know what to say. He says, but you look like you need a hug.
And she just grabbed him and just started sobbing. And I'm like, that's why we're here.
That's Bernie. Kindest human being ever. Wanted to do the right thing. I mean, he's one of those people that just, he wanted to help and didn't know what to do, but he did know what to do.
It cleared the fog a little bit because I realized that we had a job to do and a responsibility by playing baseball.
These teams and these athletes, they can really make a difference. And so I think, we all learned a lesson from 9/11 that, you know, we are more than just playing for wins and losses. It's, you know, those uniforms mean a lot more than that.
Baseball, I think it has everything that replicates American society. It has that patriotic feeling, that camaraderie, everybody gets together. It certainly helped me, right? It helped my family heal. It gave us an opportunity to kind of reflect in each other and have time with each other that was separate from this. When we got to go to a baseball game, we got to just be our family. So that was a true gift.
When something tragic like this happens, there is a place where people want a norm. And I think that's what baseball did, was like, even if it's for 3 hours a day, I can turn on the game and I can watch the Mets, I can watch the Yankees, I can watch whoever it can kind of just take me away from that. I think there was a need, a desire that we have to get our lives back, that we're not going to stop. We're going to continue to be who we are and continue to live our lives. And I think baseball is a part of that.
25 years later, I still get choked up. You can't get away from it. I mean, it was such an invasion of, you know, our freedom.
It's shocking it's been that long, but time flies. And we, in a small part, try to remind people, too, you can't forget what happened here. And we try to pay respects.
Almost to a person, the players said exchanging caps with the first responders at Ground Zero made the greatest connection and a lasting impression. To mark the 25th anniversary of the attacks, Major League Baseball has scheduled the annual Subway Series between the Mets and the Yankees to be played on September 11th at Yankee Stadium.
Changes in sexual performance are more common than most people realize, and support doesn't need to feel awkward. With MedExpress, everything happens privately online. Start by completing a short consultation reviewed by UK-registered clinicians. If eligible, treatment is delivered discreetly to your home, with ongoing support whenever you need it. You're not alone in this. Visit medexpress.co.uk/podcast to learn more.
As we look back after 25 years, we think about how important baseball was in helping New York heal. Without question, we can point to one defining moment. It was the Mets' first game back at Shea Stadium after the attack. There may have been Broadway stars at the game that night, but what happened there had a Hollywood ending.
This was the first major event that went on right after 9/11.
Whether or not we're going to become a target, as some people felt, whether we're going to be disrespectful, as some people thought, whether we're going to be unpatriotic, that some people thought?
It was really scary.
I told my best friends not to come. Is a bomb gonna hit? Is another plane gonna hit the stadium?
You know, security was off the charts.
I was having meetings with the Office of Emergency Management, FEMA, the police department, the fire department, FBI, and there were bomb-sniffing dogs all over the stadium. My office got dogs coming through like five times during the course of the day.
Bomb squad and bomb-sniffing dogs, and they would open up our trunks, and it says, you know, this is the player entrance. And then you would get into the tunnel, and you'd see a bunch of policemen. Then you go, as you're walking towards the field, you see all the snipers on the roof.
You know, that first game at Shea was only 10 days after the attacks.
It was tough. It was tough to play baseball knowing how many people were hurting here.
I personally thought it was time. The city had rallied. I'd seen so many things that were inspirational in the city in that previous 10 days that I thought now is the time. Walking into the booth was something I didn't realize I needed as badly as I did. I mean, I used to joke that I had my mail sent to the upper deck at Shea Stadium. So if I had any place that was going to provide me comfort, even unknowingly, it was that booth in that ballpark. It was the very, very first feeling of normalcy that I'd had in 10 days.
I wasn't sure if there was going to be 500 people, 5,000 people, or 50,000 people. I had no idea who would take the risk and come out to show up.
It didn't stop anybody from coming. We were sold out. People wanted to be here.
The crowd, remarkably, was large, but silent.
It was so sad, but yet the ceremony and the pomp and circumstance around it was like a playoff atmosphere. So you had this like Diana Ross and Liza Minnelli. It was beautiful, but yet it was awful for the reason why they were there.
There was still fear in everybody, but as a player, I wanted to do it. You know, I wanted to be that first game back in New York. To me, I wanted to just see the smiles on the family's faces.
We did all things through the game to honor people. We had flags of every first responder in the outfield, the Port Authority, EMS, every entity was out on the outfield wall.
I remember panning to the stands and seeing people be emotional. You know, the broadcast mentioning that some of these were people who had lost family members in 9/11.
Carol Geese was one of the people that was in the crowd that night.
The Mets were a big part of the Geese family when my husband was with us. So to go there and be part of that was being with him.
I looked over and I saw a girl and a boy's, you know, tears. You know, I didn't know them from anybody in the stadium, but I knew Carol and her family was hurting.
And all of a sudden, I'm watching this man walk toward me, and he just embraced me. And he just said such wonderful, heartwarming things to me about my husband that I lost on 9/11, that he was a hero. And his key words to me were to stay strong. He just kept telling me, stay strong, you need to stay strong.
It was just about me trying to impact our family at that time, any comfort that I could give.
For him to have gone over to them and embraced them, it just spoke volumes about how that night in every way transcended a baseball rivalry.
You know, the crowd was different that night. It was like they were hoping something good was gonna happen, and you hoped you were gonna give it to them, but you didn't really know.
You know, for the first seven innings, it was a pretty docile crowd and pretty quiet place.
I'm in the outfield. I just got the big hit to put the Braves ahead.
Line to left center, and the Braves are going to take the lead.
So we're feeling good about ourselves.
You know, we're falling behind. And yet, as you see what's happening, you're thinking, wait a minute. We're down here. Piazza's on deck. Alfonso's on. The storybook ending could happen right here. Like you could see the way it was starting to be written.
This is the formula right here. Bobby Valentine wants Alfonso and Piazza to hit in either the eighth or ninth inning.
Ball four.
New York fans are so great about knowing a moment. And this was one of those moments in that you could feel it starting to well up.
And here's the man the Mets want up in this spot, down a run late in the game.
They were just slowly bouncing a little bit, getting excited.
So here are the Mets down a run. And I remember thinking to myself as Mike came to the plate, you know, if anything big is going to happen here, it has to be Mike, right?
You know, Mike's a must watch when he comes to the plate. Like, nobody goes to the bathroom. They go to the bathroom maybe when I come to the plate, not when Mike goes to the plate.
This is his moment. This is his milieu. This is what he does. Hey, down a run, eighth inning, big game. It's your spot, big boy. What are you going to do?
I was on deck and looking at Mike, you kind of looking at the pitcher, looking at Mike, and you could just feel people wanting to erupt and just let it out.
Just wanted something right to happen. And I, you know, as a manager, what the hell can you do? Leave it up to your superstar.
Javi Lopez, the catcher, was set up to the outer part of the plate. Steve Carcia, a right-handed pitcher, was on the mound.
I told myself, I just got to make quality pitches to this guy and see if I can get him out.
Fastball, nothing and one.
Strike one, outer half, down and away. Get ahead 0-1, try to make the same pitch, leave the ball a little bit more over the plate.
Like, I'm on the edge of my seat. I'm like, they can't lose this game. That would be ridiculous. That's not how the narrative goes. That's not how this story ends.
The way Javi set up, figure he's going to throw him a breaking ball, maybe see if Michael chase it. I just said, Lopez wants it away.
Lopez wants it away.
When he delivers the ball, Mike swings.
And it's hit deep to left center. Andrew Jones on the run. This one has a chance. Home run! Mike Piazza and the Mets lead.
As soon as he hit the ball, I knew it was a home run. I knew it was gone.
I really never heard a crowd unload like that.
It was like a firecracker going off. And it lit up everyone's face and their hearts. There were hugs and high fives like I had never seen before.
People were, you know, all of a sudden, that moment, the Mets fan, whoever, New York fan, it was like, yeah, you know.
We just start crying. Everybody in the box is crying.
It sounded like the whole stadium took a deep breath. Guys, everybody was up clapping. I mean, when I talk about it now, the hair stands up in my arms.
You knew the minute he hit it, it was a home run. We all watched the ball. And it was the first time I saw my children smile in all those days. Because they were so sad about everything. But they loved baseball so much, and to see them smile and to know that this is going to be okay. There's going to be a light somewhere at the end of that tunnel that my children can smile and be kids again. It was incredible.
Kind of bittersweet, obviously, to look back, seeing the tragedy of that week, and it was really an incredible range of emotions. I was very blessed to be in the right place at the right time and have an incredible moment like that. It wasn't me, it was everyone around me and everyone pulling for me.
At that instant, we took our first baby step towards an emotional recovery because the world was normal again, you know? We, as a group, could rejoice in a moment that was given to us right out of Hollywood.
You know, like the alignment of like, it was almost like, a, you know, like, how the hell did that happen?
The baseball gods had shown down upon New York and given us what we needed in such a dramatic way.
Slowly, it could end the ball game. There's one. Mets win. Up this one in the Bronx. Shea Stadium has something to smile about.
It was a moment in time for the Mets to be in New York playing a highly important game and bringing everybody together.
That was the first time I didn't mind losing the game that night. And I think we all shared that.
Because it was bigger than the Mets. It was bigger than baseball. That was a swing of Americana and the American spirit. It's just different than baseball.
There's always excitement when the World Series is played in New York in October. 6 weeks after September 11th, the Yankees were set to play Game 3 of the series at Yankee Stadium against the Arizona Diamondbacks. Could anything be more exciting? Yeah. Have the President of the United States show up to throw out the ceremonial first pitch.
And then, of course, we get to the World Series. We get beaten up the first two games. We come back home. And, you know, rumors were flying that the president was going to be there.
The security was off the chart. I can't imagine the amount of work going on behind the scenes to prepare for that. Secret Service was in the box with me. Secret Service in the office with me. They were everywhere.
We could see the silhouette of snipers on top of the stadium.
You had to go through metal detectors. There were bomb dogs in the locker room. They were checking. We didn't know what to expect.
Walking into Yankee Stadium the day President Bush came was something that, well, I'll never forget, because everyone was scared, excited, didn't know what to do.
We were all scared stiff, tell you the truth.
You know, you wanted to believe nothing would happen, but you knew you couldn't stop.
I was in the meeting with the umpires, and there was an umpire I didn't recognize. Turned out it was a Secret Service. Go ahead, I'll wait here
for you. I can still remember President Bush coming into the locker room.
He came through the clubhouse door, my locker's directly back. But in between us, between the clubhouse door and my locker, there's an interlocking NY on the carpet. And rule of thumb is you don't walk across, you walk around it. So as he was coming towards me, I saw him. Mr. President, you gotta, don't walk over, you know, walk around it. So. And he came in, I gave him a hug and said, thanks to be here. And then he wanted to know where he could, you know, throw a couple baseballs. But sure enough, we told him where the hitting facility was. You can go down there and warm up.
And of course, Derek Jeter went down to the batting cage with him and put more pressure on him than he expected to have put on him, as Derek could do with that dry sense of humor of his.
We heard about Derek Jeter saying, don't bounce it, they'll boo you. And that was so Derek, to have a bit of levity there.
Derek gave him a few pointers about getting on the mound to pitch the ball. Derek told him, if he bounces it, you're in New York, they will boo you. And he, oh, I think I'm nervous now.
When the president came down the runway through our dugout to go out, he said to me, you're going to kick their butt. I said, I hope so.
My office opened up into its own little private box that sat behind home plate on the third base side, arguably one of the best seats in the house.
I was out running sprints with Scott Brosius. And at the time, you're in awe because of what's going on.
You knew it was a huge moment.
Myself and my pitching coach, Mel Stottemeyer, was warming up in the outfield. And I stopped and Mel goes, is everything okay? And I go, yeah, Mel. I said, turn around, because the president's fixing to walk out of the dugout.
And then the president walked out and I don't remember anything because I was crying. It just was so emotional.
And I remember feeling such a sense of pride and respect when he walked out on the field. I know that that man cared so much about what happened that day.
That was pressure. You know, when you consider right now, everybody's watching and they're certainly gonna let you know how they feel.
And then, of course, the first pitch itself.
I don't know that I've ever heard Yankee Stadium louder. The stadium was shaking.
It really was loud, like someone hit a home run and won the World Series, but it was different. It was a prideful yell.
There's the president coming out there, throwing a perfect strike, letting the world know we're not going anywhere.
It was as presidential a moment that I could ever recall.
I saw a leader that went out there, you know, went out there on the mound and just threw a good pitch that day. That meant an awful lot to real people, to real men and real women that had lost so much on September 11th.
It brought a feeling of comfort and strength, and it was just another symbol of, it's gonna be okay. We're gonna get through this. And I thought it was great leadership. Such an iconic moment. It was powerful. There's no doubt about it.
That's one of those moments we'll never forget. Just as Tunnel to Towers has made its mission to never forget. Throughout this coming year, T2T will deliver 343 mortgage-free homes all across the country as a way to pay tribute to the 343 firefighters who lost their lives on September 11th. There are ways you can help T2T on their mission to do good. Just $11 a month can transform the lives of our veterans, first responders, and Gold Star families. Go to T2T.org for more information on how a small contribution can make a big difference. My Marine unit was down at Ground Zero for weeks working on the rubble piles. We were part of the search for survivors. We couldn't use heavy machinery, so we carried buckets of debris down by hand. Painfully, the mission went from search and rescue to search and recovery. For many of the rescue workers and first responders who dug through the steel and debris, it's not just the pain and grief that lingers. It's also the life-threatening illnesses that continue 25 years later. Former New York Mets manager Terry Collins now lives in Florida. He's become close friends with two former responders from New York who moved there due to health issues related to 9/11.
I know you, there's a reason why you guys are here in Florida.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Respiratory diseases that I got from 9/11 in recovery. And they found that I had Mycobacterium avium complex, chronic bronchitis, chronic sinusitis.
I actually got sick last year for a constant cough.
Yeah.
Passed out twice, got stitches, staples. And this weather's so much better down here.
Which department were you with? I was a member of the New York City Fire Department.
A member of the Department of Sanitation, New York City.
Tell us about some of your experiences when the towers were hit.
Well, I was actually home, and I said, oh, my God. I said, we're under attack. And I knew I lost a lot of friends right off the bat. You know, a lot of cousins that were on the police department that were down there. And I recall my father thinking we lost a whole generation of my family.
Wow.
We started going down to the site, and they just told us, clean up whatever you see. It was just dust. I lost two good friends. I just lost one 2 months ago from cancer, from 9/11. And the other one was last year. So when I got sick this year, they were basically thought I had cancer. I was sick for a good 10 months this year. And God, thank God, it just came back. Well, no cancer, of course.
Yeah. You guys are certainly personify what everybody thinks, you know, first responders are all about.
Terry is committed to Tunnel to Towers. You'll find him taking part in the annual 5K run and attending many other Tunnel to Towers events. He's there to support the mission of T2T, especially helping the survivors and families of rescue workers. People like Lisa Tersolino. Her husband, Port Authority Police Officer Steve Tersolino, was home on Long Island when the attack happened. From the following day on, he worked tirelessly as part of the search and rescue team at Ground Zero.
Felt fortunate that we were spared tragedy personally in that moment, thinking like we dodged a bullet. He wasn't there, thank God.
But the rescue effort took its toll and eventually took Steve's life.
We didn't talk about the dust or the air quality. I do distinctly remember his uniform absolutely having a toxic smell to it. He had a spot on his lung that was then monitored. It took over his lungs, his brain, his bones, and eventually it took his life in September of 2013. I was contacted by the Tunnel to Towers Foundation through the Port Authority Police Department. The foundation paid off the mortgage to our home. Finding out that our mortgage was going to be paid off, it left me speechless. It's one less thing for us to have to worry about.
I think it's really important that we not forget those families, especially here at the foundation, because those families were the guys digging for my dad and digging for my dad's friends, all the guys in his firehouse. So we owe it to them, you know, They got sick looking for my father.
Patrick and James Dowdell were just teenagers when they begged for permission to go down to Ground Zero to help the members of FDNY Rescue 4 search for their father, Fire Lieutenant Kevin Dowdell.
I'd meet Pat after school, all of a sudden, right, like 17, 18, remember smoking cigars, drinking coffee, kind of standing there with these guys that my father worked with literally the day before, you know? I don't think we knew how much Mom knew at the time. I think we thought we were just slipping away, but she was informed by the guys in the firehouse that we were down there.
They were so young, and I thought, why do they have to see this at 17 and 18? In retrospect, I think the time they spent there talking with the other firemen that worked with Kevin was almost like therapy for them.
When we realized that we weren't able to recover him, we set up a funeral. We filled a casket with everything that meant something to Dad, and he got the proper send-off that he deserved.
They both had a direction at that point. He wanted to be a fireman. He wanted to go to West Point.
When I did graduate and got to my unit in the military, there were a huge percentage of the guys that were in those, you know, in my platoon or in my company had signed up because of 9/11. So I wanted them to know that I was there to share that burden and that journey with them.
I always wanted to be a firefighter. I just emulated my father. You know, I have pictures of my boys sitting at the kitchen table, and I have the same pictures of, you know, me and Pat in the firehouses and stuff. I think there's something to be said for just kind of giving your all to help someone to be there for their worst moments. I took the test for the FDNY when I was a senior in high school. The first 10 years, I was in a truck in Brooklyn. I actually got promoted to lieutenant of all days on my father's 70th birthday. And because he died line of duty, they retired the badges. I requested it and I got his badge number. It was just, you know, I'm not a big signs person, but it was definitely a nice touch to know that he was kind of still watching over, kind of still around.
Just like the Dowdells, the Siller family was never able to recover Stephen's remains. However, Stephen Jr. says he takes comfort in the fact that his dad's body is forever ingrained in the city he loved. Earlier in the program, we introduced you to Carol Geese and Brian Jordan. They showed how one hug helped Carol and her whole family begin to heal after the awful events of September 11th. A few months ago, we brought Carol and Brian together at Citi Field, and you could see immediately that one moment changed both of their lives forever.
My eyes filling up with tears already.
I'm sweating. You have no idea, Jesus.
Oh, my gosh.
I got choked up looking at him walk toward me. How much he means to me. This is
granddaughter, what's up? Give me hugs.
Good to see you. Good to see you. How old are you? 16.
Sorry to tell you, 16. But she's a diehard nephew.
That's okay. That's okay. Today, you can get away with that.
Well, I often think about third baseline, coming home and hugging the family. God.
Ever since that day, you have had a place in my heart. You were the first person to acknowledge 9/11 from the outside, I guess, to me, like just walking up and in that setting. It was just something I will never, ever, ever forget.
They'll always be with me. You know, one, I got that picture in my bedroom. Yep, and that's it. That's the picture in my room.
Take me back to that.
Right there. Thanks. Stay strong.
That's what you were. God bless. Stay strong.
Yep.
Stay strong was like the best words anybody ever could have said to me. And that has been in my head since that day. It will be with me forever.
Yeah.
The bond that'll never, ever go away.
Exactly. Never.
As bad as that day was, that's where that story ends. And there's a whole new story of good
Tunnel of Towers is helping people who are on generally the front line as it started from 9/11 and the first responders and now to military families.
Taking care of not just the people there that day, not just the people that worked there for a year, not just the people that survived, not just the people that 20 years later getting cancer. Makes me very proud. I'm a big supporter.
Tunnel to Towers has made a commitment and a promise to you that we are going to pay off your mortgage. You're never going to have to worry about your mortgage again.
They are giving back and helping a fireman who got hurt on a job, or a fireman who lost his life, or a policeman who got shot, and they're paying the mortgage off for the houses. The veterans that come back are disabled veterans who they're making handicap accessible homes for them.
I mean, you think about a guy that now can shower on his own. He doesn't need somebody to hold his hand in there. Or the cabinets are built perfectly. They've got it down to a science. They changed lives. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
We can't forget what happened, and we can't forget our response and what we did together. And again, what the foundation is continuing to do now to help people, we shouldn't forget, and we shouldn't go back to normal.
What Tunnel to Towers has done is no less heroic than any of those people who gave their lives on September 11th, 2001.
I think the ultimate tribute is we can give someone who we lost is to live life in their honor and try to recover. But I think the real satisfaction is, what are you going to sacrifice to make your neighborhood, your family, your community, your city a better place?
The best way to honor somebody is to lead a good, clean, full life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I feel about my brother Stephen and my siblings and I when we started the Tunnel to Towers Foundation.
The foundation has had 25 years of showing up for military service members, first responders, and the people of our community, and we're gonna have 25, 50, 75, 100 more, whatever it takes, quite frankly.
This is an amazing, amazing organization that's, you would think, like a family from Staten Island, and now the whole country is on board helping them out.
We've grown so much to get to the point where we are now, but the growing hasn't stopped because these first responders and their families, they're gonna need it, right? These military service members, they're gonna need it. So as long as somebody needs it, the foundation will keep showing up.
Thank you for spending this hour with us. And a big shout out to the Laugh Factory for opening their doors to us. We especially wanna thank everyone at the Mets and Yankees organizations for all they did 25 years ago to help New York and the nation heal. I'm honored that Tunnel to Towers Foundation asked me to host this program. Because of their commitment and tireless work, we can all take comfort in knowing that we will never forget. If you want to help T2T, a donation of just $11 a month can significantly change the lives of so many deserving first responders, service members, and veterans, especially those in need. I'm Rob Riggle. Good night.